Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And I'm Mark Sheeran, and we are the co-authors of The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap with our colleague, Stephen Slate.
We want to tell you quick about our solution to addiction coaching packages. They've become very popular. We've had really great success with them. They include the Solution to Addiction Workshops, and we have one for substance use specifically, and then we have one for behavioral issues, specifically PMO and sex addiction. And they also include three 90-minute coaching sessions with either Mark or myself, and 3 months of the online program, and all of our books. The Solution to PMO and Sex Addiction book is now available with our Solution to PMO and Sex Addiction Workshop only. And look at the coaching package is a tremendous value. And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to thefreedommodel.org. And at the top of the page, you can choose whichever one you're looking for.
That's right. It's the most effective solution to any addiction in the world.
It is.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
she does need a microphone.
I do need a microphone. I'm pretty loud.
Not
that loud. So I used to be that loud, though, didn't I?
Yeah.
My kids are that loud. So we're going to continue last week's podcast topic about the problems with addiction recovery support groups. And one of the things that people say that they miss the most when they leave, and I can honestly say when I was leaving, this was quite an adjustment, is many of us, when we join AA or NA, it becomes our whole lives. It becomes our social groups. Some of us start our careers with the people there. We marry people in the cult, because there is this idea that you have to kind of shed your old life and dive in with both feet into this new world and make it your everything, right? It has to be, you know, you don't want to be associating with people that are drinking or drug using, and that's more than half the population, even though most people don't do it problematically. So a lot of people, when they leave, their biggest criticism of leaving, or the biggest problem with leaving, is that they're lonely.
Yeah, I think there's a real implied benefit of a cult, and that is you get love bombed in the beginning. You feel this almost otherworldly sensation of belonging that you may not have felt anywhere. And especially if that belonging is centered on something that was so problematic, and you can convert the whole ethos of AA is that you're converting a bad situation into an asset. And they work that into the model where they cook in that you have to give away the AA model in order to keep your sobriety. So there's this really intricate way that they play on your insecurities, and your need for love, and your need and desire to connect and belong. And I'll tell you, that is a powerful, powerful bit of marketing that 12-step groups have used for over 80 years now. So the other angle that we want to talk about, well, let me finish what I was thinking with that. So I remember wanting to be a part of something my whole life. And
me too.
And when I started drinking, I was a real little guy. I hit puberty late, and I was small, physically small. But at 13, I figured out that I could drink six beers and be okay while a lot of my friends were on the ground rolling mm-hmm. around and couldn't handle it. And so my drinking became my sport. Other kids were playing baseball. I didn't have the emotional maturity to be able to handle conflict well. So, and challenges well. I was sort of a quitter. So, but this drinking thing, I was really good at it. And then, you know, I spent the next 6 years of my life destroying my life slowly over time into a bad state. And then enter AA, right? AA was in the fabric of our family. And so I knew I was going to land there. So I was almost working my drinking and drugging into a position where I could belong in this other thing. So it went directly from partying and being chaotic there to this sort of pseudo spiritual weird place in AA where I belonged and I had some reason to belong. So once you take on that identity, the 12-step groups can be really, really, really alluring. And I get it. I lived it. I understand it. And even when in the back of my mind, I thought, what the fuck am I doing here? I want to move on with my life. I don't want to be stuck here for the rest of my life. And I knew the rehab game was a bridge too far. That just broke me. So I'll get into my next topic after Michelle says her comments about this.
Well, you make such a good point, because so many people that I worked with, women that I worked with, had the similar experiences that I did, where we felt like we didn't belong anywhere. I felt like I didn't belong. Now, I did play sports and I was actually pretty good at it. And I went to college and I played two sports my freshman year in college. And then I got injured and I got into the party scene and I did that better. Right. The way that I tried to get friends and be in the groups I wanted to be in and make the people like me that I wanted to like me was the fact that I was a small woman that could hold my liquor. And I'm talking about liquor. Like, that was, you know, my Irish heritage. If you can hold your liquor, that is a skill. That's mm-hmm. a skill to be mm-hmm. revered. And so I took that on, but I also had the AA background as well, so that I had in the back of my mind that at some point I'm going to have to stop this. But for right now, it's getting me what I want. And I did start to feel like I belonged in that group, and the group of partiers and the group of drinkers. Those were the people I wanted to be a part of. But that ran its course. Like, this is so interesting. There's such a parallel to AA because I got in the group of partiers very early on in my substance using, you know, from about 16 on. And I stayed kind of in the two worlds, the athlete world and the partier world, which do come cross pretty well. Sure. Right. And then my partying got to the point where I couldn't stay in the athlete world, mm-hmm. and be successful. So I dove in with both feet into the party world. And even then that ran its course because I became a heavier user than even the people that I thought were heavy partiers. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And I had a little bit of a violent streak in me, and I had a lot of issues, a lot of mental health issues and things going on. So that ran its course and I was alone again. And then interestingly enough, I went to AA and I felt the love again. I was like, okay, these are my people. These are my people. But just like the party world, that ran its course.
It does.
And I always seem to be somebody that I dive into these things and I take it to an extreme, right? Some people are like, you have addictive personality or whatever. No, I'm just somebody that when I do something, I want to do it all the way.
Yeah.
And I'm driven that way. And so I became the AA studious, AA mentor, sponsor. I mean, I think I started sponsoring my first person I was 6 months sober, maybe. And very quickly, I worked myself out of friendships and into relationships that were very much conditional, which is pretty much what I figured out AA was.
Yeah, it's like a transactional.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and so within probably the first year to year and a half, I wasn't somebody that felt like, you know, these are my friends and this is my relationship. I felt very much like somebody who had to serve these people or I would die. And so it felt stressful. It felt like I was in a fishbowl, that I wasn't allowed to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was, so I'm already going into, for me, when people say to me, I'm lonely when I leave, by the time I left, I was relieved.
So there is a crossover period of what, when you start to realize, and this is what breaks down the whole treatment 12-step ethos, that you need support. When you start to realize, maybe I don't need support and I just want to go do this, and they don't agree with it. And you start thinking for yourself.
Yeah.
And once you start thinking for yourself, you're never going to be happy in AA again.
No.
Because it requires, the framework of it is built with very rigid rules. There are 12 steps and everybody must take them to gain freedom. And that's not
to an extreme.
And that's not even remotely real. Like that's made up shit. And it doesn't even come close to working with a mind, the human mind, that is predicated on free will, your own autonomy, meaning you have your own thoughts, your own choices in free will, that you can choose anything. And then your expressions of your positive drive principle are your own. What you decide is going to be beneficial to you is your own. So once you start to grasp this, whether you know those terms or not, you naturally, all humans do this, they naturally start to express their own autonomy because it's in our nature to do so. It is only when we see the benefit being in AA or a 12-step group or a pharmaceutical protocol or some other support thing, if we're believers in that, then we're expressing our autonomy, we're expressing our positive drive principle, we're expressing our free will and saying, that's of benefit to me. But eventually what Michelle just described is, if it's not really objectively true and beneficial, it will run its course because it will get tested by you. Yeah. And so as you naturally test an ethos or an idea that AA is presenting to you, or some pharmaceutical company or psychiatrist is presenting to you, it runs its course and you test it. You don't realize you're testing it, but it's the nature of a human being with free will and autonomy to test something for its positive drive value. And eventually you're going to make a decision about that thing, protocol, or type of support. And you're going to say, is it beneficial to me? Now, I guarantee you any benefit of support that you're receiving, and support meaning external to you, right? Something that's propping you up, it will fail. And it will fail because it's run by other human beings that don't know your thoughts. So right. They can't address your needs. They right. can't possibly address your needs. They don't know them. Not only that, but you're going to lie about them in AA meetings. You're going to play the game. You're going to play the peer game. So what happens is, it starts falling short naturally. And then your positive drive, your autonomy, and your ability to choose, your free will is going to kick in naturally because that's what you are. And then you're going to start looking outside that support network. Then you're going to get pushback. And then you're going to feel weird. And you're going to vacillate back and forth. Oh, I really do need AA. I really do need this support. Oh my God. And they convince you of it. And there's benefit there. And then you start believing in the old bullshit again. And then you go, nah. And then your mind starts wandering and going, I want to live. I just want to live a normal life, man. I want to go get that job. I want to marry that person. I want to have relationships. I want to get laid. I want to have fun. I want to moderately drink. I want to test the waters with heroin again. I want to do this, 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 and this. And none of that fits inside those 12-step rules, or maybe a bad therapist, or whatever it is you're using for support, because they can't possibly know your path. That's why Freedom Model Coaching works, because we work with you where you're at, and you're home, and you're living your life, and we don't make any judgments about that. You say, I want to experiment. It's like, okay, I think that's great. You know, let's ask some questions about that. Let's ask, is this working for you? Is it fulfilling? Is it matching your values, the things that are important to you? And then we just ask the questions. Then you get to answer them. That's not support. That's just a sounding board. And it works.
Yeah. Yeah. So to pull it back to, if you're leaving a support group system, if you're leaving the recovery support group systems, you know, and your biggest fear, and I think this is a big obstacle for people, and I think that's why they vacillate back and forth, is loneliness.
Yep. That's the biggest.
That's the biggest one. Yep. It's like, I don't want to be lonely. My whole life is here.
Yep.
And you, but before you went to that support group, your whole life was someplace else.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's something that people forget.
Yeah. And they forget they were lonely there too.
You forget you're lonely wherever you are. And the truth was, yes, I did make lifelong friends, in AA. Mm-hmm. He's one of them. Yep. Right. I mean, honestly, the truth was I met you before I went to AA, but A kind of was what brought
all of us together,
mm-hmm. right? And so, yeah, I did have real friends there.
But the real friends are the only ones that stayed by your side as you left.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Like, it was not conditional.
Right.
And so there's a difference. So some people say, well, every organization can be cult. Like, no, that's not true. Okay. When you go to an organization specifically to change a behavior that's internal to you, okay, a behavior that's internal to you, and you have this idea that I have to go to this place and do everything these other people say in order so I won't do something that I like to do. I mean, on its face, can you see that that's not going to work? I mean, because the decision you make to go do whatever it is you're going to do is completely internal to you. You have these reasons. And yes, can you discuss with a coach or someone or even a good close friend mm-hmm. your reasons? Sure, you can do that. But if the person on the other side already has a vested interest in what they want you to do, that discussion is probably not going to work.
Right.
Does that mean so? I mean, this is tough stuff to understand, but even if you go to a therapist and the therapist has already predetermined what you should do.
Yeah. What you need.
That's not a good therapist.
That's right.
That's not somebody that has your best interest in a part. That's somebody that has theirs.
Right.
Okay. Because they can't possibly know what's best for you.
You know, it's funny when I'm coaching somebody, you can't help but be a human being in a coaching session.
Well,
even as a coach, no matter how much I train people and train myself. True. So I will, there are a lot of times where I will, I'll go through and I'll say, listen, this is my opinion. We're going to stop this session for a minute. And this is my opinion. And I go, do you want my opinion? And then I always predicate it with, I don't really know if this right. is even true for you, you know, and then I'll even further qualify by saying, and my students will laugh, they'll say, you know, I don't want to put ideas in your head either.
Right.
You know, so discount what I'm saying if it's total bullshit, and they laugh and we laugh together. And then I give my opinion on something if they want it. But the vast majority of time, I know that my opinion is worth nothing. It's worth nothing. And so there's vast amounts of time where I'm not giving my opinion. I'm asking questions and then I'm repeat. And then what I do
yes.
is I repeat what they said. And I said, do I have that right? Do I have your story correct? Do I have the situation correct? Yes. Okay. Then I go to my next question. And what that does is the person starts to naturally problem solve their own issues. But you have to know what to ask. You know, and that's what the training in CBE is all about, what our cognitive behavioral education model of coaching. But the point is, there's a way to help people without domineering or telling or prescribing what they need from a third party perspective, what they need, what they should be doing, because nobody knows what that person should be doing but themselves, because they're at a point. Let's say that they have a terrible marriage, they have legal trouble, they're shooting heroin every day, they've overdosed 5 times in the last 6 months, they've almost died. It's very easy to walk into that situation and start prescribing what you should do.
Right. Obviously, you shouldn't be using heroin anymore because it's so dangerous.
Right. But the obvious answer in reality is they already have determined that heroin is their answer. That's what all their actions are telling
us. That's right.
So if we're not starting from the perspective of you believe heroin is your coping mechanism, your stress relief, your warm blanket for your emotions, or whatever other lies you're telling yourself about a drug, specifically a drug, that's what you believe.
So right, and I'm not here to tell you that that's not true for you.
That's right. So I call it a lie here because I'm being flippant. But the point is, I'll say, let's challenge that, though, against the science.
Exactly.
Let's challenge, is the molecules involved in heroin or alcohol or whatever it might be, are the pixels on the screen with PMOing, are they some sort of actual coping mechanism? And when we start to break it down, you realize, oh, it can't be. Okay, logically it can't be. So what else is at play here? Well, there's that belief. And then what am I using it for? And then you figure out that you really are okay without it eventually. That's the whole process of the freedom model. But you come to that conclusion. I'm not telling you to stop. I never tell somebody to stop.
Never.
You know, some people almost always start out with, I got to stop. And I go,
well,
no,
yeah,
no.
They'll literally start by saying, you have to tell me to stop.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, how many people have already told you that?
Yeah, you tell yourself that and you don't do it.
You just told me you spent 20 years in AA meetings with people telling you you shouldn't be drinking. And did you stop drinking?
Right.
You know, even if you go to these meetings and you go to a therapist, and even if your behaviors are changing and you're changing your behaviors, you're doing it.
Right.
That's you're right. Doing it because you are internally evaluating, this is what I'd rather be doing. Maybe I don't value that as much as I used to. Maybe it is different. Now, maybe you're scaring yourself into not doing it for a period of time, but that's only going to work so long.
Right.
And that's why you see people going through that revolving door, because fear-based abstinence doesn't last. It has to shift to, no, I know I'm happier making this change. I don't value getting drunk as much as I used to. And as a natural course of growing up, most people come to that conclusion. We see that in the data all the time. So with respect to if I leave AA, if I leave my even if it's a Christian recovery group or Smart Recovery or one of these other recovery groups, if I leave these groups so that I can go be autonomous and live my own life, aren't I going to be lonely? And the answer is only if you want to.
Yeah.
Because meeting people is just as easy as it's always been.
It is. And as hard as it's always been.
And as hard as it's always been. Right.
I mean, it's just part of life. Loneliness and boredom are a part of being human.
Yes. And you can't be afraid of, I mean, if you're afraid of those things and that's what's driving you back to the groups, you're not going to, it's the same thing as being afraid of being bored and going back to drinking and you're still bored drinking.
Right. I'm going to back up a bit to the charade of support. So I'm backing up into something we were talking about earlier, because it occurred to me that in the end, I call support a charade because no other human mind other than your own can ever make a decision for you, which is really kind of strange when you think about it. So what's behind the idea of needing support or support? Now, I would dare say that you can support somebody in a physical endeavor. You can load shingles on a roof together, and you will be giving support to the job at hand. Absolutely true. Empirically, objectively true. You can look at it and go, okay, I'm supporting this person in this physical endeavor. But because the human mind is autonomous and all your emotions come from your interpretations that you have in your mind, and your interpretations in your mind are you. So your interpretations are literally how you think, why you think, what you believe, and how you're going to act based on those beliefs, and how you're going to feel in your emotional states based on interpretations, right? So that is all contained within you, and nobody else knows about it. Okay, that's so nobody else can touch it. Nobody else can affect it without your permission. That's the important part. So then you get into a contract, an implied contract with the people in AA, and that is, you're here to support me. I'm here for support. But the weird part is, they can't support you. They can't go into your mind and prop you up.
No.
What they can do is give you information. Now, the question becomes, is the information empowering or is it disempowering? So,
good point.
So when I was in AA, and the way we constructed the freedom model was, we ended up being the opposite of AA, because AA is a disempowering model. And the only model that can be empowering is you, because you can only change you. There is no support mechanism that can, there's only the dissemination of information from one autonomous mind to another through the mouth and through talking and acting, right? So you either agree with that information and take it on as your own, as a belief, as an interpretation that you value. Now, if you value AA's information, that is, I value being scared and being pushed in a fear-based direction as a quick and easy way for me to avoid drinking alcohol or doing drugs or PMOing or whatever it might be in whatever group you're in. Okay, own it. I did. I went to AA. I followed the whole fucking bullshit narrative and went down the road and sponsored people, became a fundamentalist big book thumping wacko. I did all of it. I did all of it. And then eventually I realized none of this shit is real. Like I'm teaching people something that doesn't make sense. Now, then I started to realize about the positive drive principle. The research just brought us out into a different place. So you have to decide, what am I going to volunteer for within my mind and take on?
Yeah.
Do I want to take on information that says that I don't have power, or do I want to take on information that says I've been free to think and I do think by myself, on my own, anyway? I'm thinking alcohol is great. I'm thinking heroin is great. I can change that belief. That's pretty empowering. But AA says you can't without some third party, either God, this amorphous, strange God that they create, or a sponsor, or a meeting room, or church basement, or this group of drunks, G-O-D, God, group of drunks. Talk about cult. You know, so how much of this do you want to take on as your own? You're the one doing it. You're the one interpreting this as valuable to you. So you can say, you know what? I don't need all of that. I'm going to think for myself.
Yeah.
I'm going to challenge my own internal thoughts about my habit. And if you want to do that, that's what that book behind us is all about. That's what the workshops are. You want the fast track to getting free and moving on with your life out of this whole charade that you're playing? Well, that's what we designed for you.
Yeah. Just being a part of the group, a part of a group support system, means that you still believe that substances or whatever you're trying to stop has power, and that you are weak. Just being a part of that. So even when people say, well, I'm going back because I'm lonely, that's a little bit of a red herring, because you can't be in that system truly in that system and a part of that system unless you have the belief that you need it.
That's right.
Right? That there is power in, I mean, that's the thing about what we teach that's so opposite is alcohol doesn't have any power, not good or bad power.
Right. Doesn't have sentience.
It doesn't have the power to make a bad day a good day. It doesn't have the power to change your mood. It doesn't have the power to enslave you. It doesn't have any of those powers. But if you're in a system, a support system, you believe it does. Mm-hmm. You believe it has those powers. It's both scary and wonderful. And you need this support to help you to not give in to those powers, right? And that's why of all the things that the support group system does, that's the most damaging. That is the most damaging because it makes you believe that somehow, some way you're weak and you need something outside you to prop you up.
Yeah, that's a great point. The weakness argument, the falsity of that is so huge. But if you believe it, it becomes truth.
Sure
you
does.
Know, everything that you're being fed in the weakness argument becomes your truth and will make you feel that way based on your belief in it. But it's never been a matter of weakness. It's been a matter of value judgment.
Yep.
You're always with your positive drive comparing the value of alcohol against the value of moderating, the value of abstinence, the value of continuing heavy use, the value of your relationship with your mother, the value of, against not seeing her or seeing her or maybe not seeing her a little bit. And this is how our value judgments is our positive drive in action. There's no weakness there. It's just you've determined that alcohol is beneficial to you at some level. So as long as you keep that belief, you'll continue to drink heavily or whatever the issue might be. So this isn't a matter of weakness. As a matter of fact, on the planet Earth, we're the most powerful beings because we have utter, total, complete free will within the confines of our minds. So you get to decide the value you're going to put in drinking, the value you're going to put in AA, NA, or whatever it might be, or the value you're going to put in your ability to think for yourself.
Yeah, your
autonomy. Ultimately, your autonomous mind is infinitely powerful because you can choose anything in your mind.
You can believe anything.
That's right.
And
you choose.
You get to choose, but to change your beliefs requires you to challenge your beliefs, requires you to look for evidence that what you believe may be wrong.
New information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is. And I want to just talk about friendship very briefly and close it with this, because if you're somebody that's leaving a cult like AA, NA, or, you know, one of the other groups, support groups, and you're thinking, and it can be a scary thing if that's been your whole world for any period of time. Real friends don't put conditions, okay? The reason that, in some cases, even religion, and please know that I'm Catholic and I'm a practicing Catholic, but even some religions kind of put caveats on things to try and kind of keep people in line, right? To try and help them. But if somebody is your friend and sure, they want the best for you, they want what's best for you. But if they are lording over you with, if you drink, you'll die. If you go do this, you'll die. If you go date that guy in your first year, you're going to die. If you go take that job, that you're going to die. Those are the things that happened to me in AA. Those are the things that I was told by well-meaning other members of AA, okay? I was literally told I shouldn't date this certain person. I shouldn't go back to college right away. I shouldn't get this new job. That's what happens in a cult. That is how that works. That's the difference. So if you're looking for a friendship, if you're looking for another, I don't know, group of people, be sure that there's not those kinds of caveats and that those kinds of people aren't lording over you with, you're not allowed to think for yourself or you might die. Yeah. Does that, is that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then the last part of the friendship thing is when you leave, because if you're watching this, you probably are gonna.
Yeah.
Sorry. You're going to, you'll leave. And there'll be maybe one or two people that will contact you afterwards. Everybody else will fall away and stay in the cult. You'll be enemy number one.
Yeah.
And you'll realize that they were never friends to begin with. So just move on.
Yeah, because, just move on.
Because the friendships that you had there were false and conditional and transactional.
And don't worry about everybody talking crap about you because you know what? It's interesting. It's a very kind of cults kind of have this immature thing going on where if people are, they're either on the outs or the in, and it was a lot like high school, you know, you're either in the in group or the out group or whatever it is. And just let all that stuff go. Let it wash away. It is a relief. When I finally left, it was a huge relief. And look it, I dealt with guilt with my sponsees. I dealt with feeling like I was doing the wrong thing for a period of time. I dealt with certain amounts of fear, like, oh my gosh, what, you know, fear of the unknown. What is my life going to be like? You deal with all those things anytime you're doing something new. And especially when you're leaving a cult, it has those extra nuances of the guilt and shame and fear. And so that's all normal.
Yep.
That's all normal, but just forge ahead. And learn to listen to yourself again. Learn to become autonomous again and be a free thinker. And it's pretty amazing, actually. And we can certainly help you. We've helped thousands of people leave AA and NA.
Well, we have the deprogramming from the 12 steps course. We do. I mean, get the course. If you really are questioning what we're saying, I lay out in 5 seminars in this course exactly why and where AA came from and why it's a cult and why you should leave.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. And that will ease your mind with all of the doubts about leaving.
Yeah.
It'll really show you exactly AA for what it is. And all the 12-step groups that emanated from it, that's right. Actually.
That's right.
So, all right. Well, I think we've covered that and I hope this was helpful to you. And this is going to be released right around Thanksgiving. So if you're here in the U.S., happy Thanksgiving. And we'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody.